Okay, Matt, you can start the recording whenever. Good morning, everyone. I'm Brian Crosius, Chairman of the North Dakota Public Service Commission. With me today are Commissioners Julie Fedorchak and Commissioner Randy Christman, as well as members of staff. Representing the Commission, Commissioner Fedorchak is dialed in remotely. I will be serving as the hearing officer for today's hearing, unless there are any objections. Today's case is PSC versus Quest regarding show cause, case number PU-20-442. Please let the record show that it is just after 9 a.m. on December 10th, 2020. Today's hearing is originating from the Commission Hearing Room located at the State Capitol with an address of 600 East Boulevard Avenue, Department 408, Bismarck, North Dakota, 58505, and is held being held remotely due to a state of emergency due to COVID-19 virus. The public may view the hearing electronically on the PSC website as it is live streamed. This matter was considered based upon the filings in this case and based upon the affidavit of Stacy Eberl. Quest, otherwise known as CenturyLink, or also known as CenturyLink, is doing business as a telecommunications company in the state of North Dakota. Beginning on August 27th, 2020, Commission staff received a complaint from Sharon Gerbig stating she and her husband, Gordon Gerbig, have had unresolved issues with their landline phone service regarding quality of service. Commission staff has worked at resolving the quality of service with the Gerbigs and CenturyLink. As of the end of October 2020, the issue has not yet been resolved. The provisions of North Dakota Century Code Chapter 49-21 give the Commission power to investigate the methods and practices of persons subject to its jurisdiction and to require them to conform to the laws of this state and to all rules, regulations, and orders of the Commission. North Dakota Century Code 49-21-10.3 provides if the Commission finds service to be inadequate, the Commission may direct the company to take reasonable and necessary remedial action to provide adequate service, in addition to criminal and civil penalties as provided in North Dakota Century Code, Chapter 49-07. North Dakota Administrative Code 69-02-02-09 empowers the Commission to show cause orders, to issue show cause orders. The first thing we will do is have appearances. We will start with the company, Mr. Sanderson.
Thank you, Commissioner. Paul Sanderson on behalf of the company.
And how many witnesses do you expect to call today?
With that, Commissioner, I'd like to introduce Attorney Jason Topp with the company, and he'll be taking the lead on this hearing.
Okay. I don't have any objection. Commissioner Fedorchak, Commissioner Christman, Mr. Johnson.
Good by me.
Mr. Johnson.
No objection.
Commissioner Christman. Okay, that is granted. And Mr. Topp, how many witnesses will you be calling on today?
Thank you, Chair Crosius. I have two witnesses, Mr. Brad Giles, who has responsibility for our network that serves the Belfield area and serves Mr. and Mrs. Gerbig, and also Andrew Schreiner, who is our director for legislative affairs and public policy for the region with responsibility for North Dakota, to discuss some of the context of this particular issue.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we will now move to the commission. Mr. Johnson.
Brian Johnson, legal with the Public Service Commission.
And how many witnesses do you plan to call today?
Two witnesses, Stacy Eberl and Ms. Gerbig.
Okay, we will now move on to opening remarks by the commissioners. Commissioner Christman.
Well, looking forward to the testimony and in the opening leadoff, you mentioned starting with a complaint in August, and that's, I guess, the complaint that really propelled it. But the fact of the matter is we've had complaints a long time, even previous to that. This has been an ongoing thing. And one of the concerns that I've had for a long time as a portfolio holder for telecommunications, but even way before that, in my time as a legislator, in both politics and in the corporate world, it seems like the fun thing to do is to talk about the shiniest object out there. What's the newest invention? How many people do we have the best broadband service to, if you're in the telecommunications world or if that's the subject of the day? That's all we want to talk about. And it's really important. I use it all the time. I'm so grateful that at my ranch up by Hazen, I'm able to participate in meetings like this a good part of the time since last March, occasionally before last March, and have that broadband capability to do as the witnesses are doing and call in remotely. It's a wonderful gift. But it's not the only thing out there. Even though that's the shiny object that's fun to talk about, plain old telephone service, nobody wants to talk about it anymore. But if you live out in rural areas of North Dakota or other areas of the country, there are times when having the best and brightest internet service isn't the most important thing. If you have an emergency and want to get the ambulance to your home, plain old telephone service is what you need. And if you're just grateful for some of the newer inventions like reverse 911 in the middle of a hot, dry summer, when you're just grateful that your taxes are, in fact, a little bit higher, but you know that if there's a prairie fire sweeping across the plains, that you're going to get a call from your county and notify you to evacuate. But if you don't have plain old telephone service, guess what? You're just going to be out there until it's probably too late. Plain old telephone service is still pretty important. And we in government and we in private sector industry cannot get so focused on the shiny object of broadband telecommunications that we lose track of plain old telephone service. It is still vital in America today. And I look forward to the hearing and the information. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Christman. Commissioner Fedorchak.
Good morning, everyone. I couldn't say it any better than Randy, so I won't attempt to. I look forward to the hearing today. I am out of the office and my dealing with a family issue, but I do have a couple hours that I'm hoping that I can be here for the bulk of this hearing in person, and I may have to just listen in for the remainder of the hearing after 11 o'clock if it goes into the afternoon. I have no idea what to expect in terms of time, but wanted to be here virtually in person as long as possible. So thank you very much, and look forward to a productive morning.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Fedorchak. I don't have any opening comments. I would echo Commissioner Fedorchak's remarks in that Commissioner Christman stated it very well. Are there any other preliminary opening remarks, matters, or motions? Mr. Topp?
Chair Crotchis, I don't have any motions or anything of that nature. I have prepared an opening statement, if now is the appropriate time to make that.
That would be fine.
That would be fine.
Thank you, commissioners, and thank you for your opening statements. In November of 2016, CenturyLink entered into a settlement agreement with the commission on issues related to service in the Bellfield and Fairview exchanges. As a part of that settlement, CenturyLink agreed to install fiber along you know, out in this area and to rehabilitate 10 cable routes. The fiber got broadband out to 307 customers in that area, and the cable routes were designed to make sure that the plain old telephone service that was raised in the opening comments was more stable out to those areas. Eight of these rehabilitation projects were out of the Belfield Exchange. One of them delivers service to Mr. and Mrs. Gerbig at 5215 East River Road in Amador. CenturyLink performed the work that it committed to perform as a part of that settlement agreement. It installed the fiber, it performed the cable rehabilitation in 2017 and early 2018. The rehabilitation on an overall basis was has been successful and has dramatically reduced the number of repair tickets in the Belfield Exchange. We filed with the commission Exhibit 1 that shows the difference in trouble report rates sort of year by year. And you see a dramatic difference between 2016, 2017, first part of 2018, and since that time period. However, delivering consistent and reliable service to the Gerbig residents is particularly difficult. Their home is 18 miles away from the nearest fiber that we installed as a part of that project, and it's simply too far away from the end of that fiber to connect copper and have the signal successfully go all the way to their home. So the way that the Gerbigs are served is through a cable, a copper route that runs an estimated 37 miles from the Belfield Central office to the Gerbig home. In order to get the signal to cross those 37 miles, it requires over 15 repeaters that boost the signal as it goes along the distance to get all the way to the end. Each repeater, needs to be maintained. It's older technology and has become more and more difficult keep those things stable. In reviewing the Gerbig's account, our records indicate that their service was relatively stable for the most part following the rehabilitation project, at least in 2018, and it appears for a lot of 2019. Problems started to appear late in 2019. We were initially able to repair the service, but problems popped up again in the spring of 2020. Our technicians have worked in the spring of 2020. We stabilized it for a period of time, and then it started to really have problems associated with the events that lead to this complaint. We've worked very hard to try and maintain the existing service that runs to the Gerbig residents. Our analysis today is that while the copper line is pretty good out to their area, that the current infrastructure can't be maintained at a reasonable cost to maintain service to them. So we've explored a bunch of options for a longer term solution in dealing in making sure that they have service. We looked at wireless. There was a new wireless tower that went up in the area, but the nature of the terrain at their home, as well as the distance they are from even this new wireless tower, is just simply too far away for that to be an effective substitute. We have looked at what we have looked at is and had hoped to offer before this hearing. We think we're going to be in a position to offer it today and actually deliver it is a satellite phone. And we would offer that to the Gerbigs as well as the two other customers served by this particular 37-mile circuit that runs out in that area. These are phones capable of operating worldwide. They can carry these when they drive down the road and use them from the road. Battery life is up to 8 hours. Operates at a wide range of temperatures. The phones would be activated with a prepaid, the highest available calling plan. And when you place a call, remaining minute alert would be heard before each call. CenturyLink would be responsible for the bill for the handsets and the calling plans, and we'd assign a 701 area code to the numbers. I brought two witnesses to the hearing. Brad Giles is the manager for region operations with responsibility for the Belfield Exchange. He assumed responsibility for North Dakota operations this past summer and has been with CenturyLink in a variety of network management roles over his career. He can describe the difficulty associated with serving the Gerbig residents, the efforts of his technicians to repair and restore service, as well as explain the challenges inherent in providing a permanent fix for these customers. My second witness, Mr. Schreiner, is available to talk about policy issues associated with serving extremely remote customers in term like the Gerbigs. Today, CenturyLink has 1/7 the number of customers that it did in North Dakota 20 years ago. It makes the finances associated with this sort of service more difficult. And in this situation, we're urging the commission to be creative in coming up with solutions to ensure that the emergency communications discussed in opening statements take care. So in reviewing this, we're going to ask the commission to recognize the efforts we've made to perform service and endorse our proposal to use a satellite phone at least as a measure for a period of time. We don't propose that this be an unending commitment. At the end of a couple of years, we would suggest that we see where we are at that point. Technologies are developing and situation may have changed. For example, the RDOF auction actually announced that someone had bid on this area. So I don't know, I don't know how things would develop. But our thought is we provide the satellite phone, pay for it, and see where we are in 2 years and decide how to move forward.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Topp. Mr. Johnson, any preliminary opening remarks, matters, or motions?
No remarks. I would stipulate to the exception of Exhibit 1 from Quest, and I would ask that they stipulate to the, I believe it's four documents that I provided as well.
I have not seen the documents. They hadn't been emailed as of before the hearing, so I just want to make sure I know what they are.
That's fine. We can just do it as we go along. That's not an issue. It won't take much more time.
Okay. All right. Very good. Okay, with that.
Brian, excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Brian, did you email those to me?
I did. I think they went. Okay. To the Gmail account of yours? I don't know. I can send them to the other one if you need it to that one.
Oh, okay. I'll look there. I was looking at my state account. Okay, thank you. You should delete that Gmail from here.
Okay, it pops up as the default, so I'm guessing that's what happened.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
Okay. Well, please let us know if you don't find them. Commissioner Fedorchak, we can pause or have someone send them to your state account. Okay, at this time, Mr. Sanderson, you may call your first witness if there are no other preliminary matters. All right, I apologize, Mr. Topp. You may call your first witness.
Thank you. We'd call Brad Giles.
Okay, Mr. Giles, can you state your name and spelling of your name for the record, please?
Yes, my name is Bradley Giles, Bradley. Giles.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Giles, I'm required by law to tell you the penalties for perjury in this state. Perjury is a Class C felony punishable by a fine of up to $10,000 or a term of imprisonment of up to 5 years or both. Do you understand what the penalty for perjury is?
Yes, I do.
Understanding so, do you promise or swear that that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Giles, you may begin.
Mr. Chair, we plan on proceeding with a question and answer format. Is that acceptable?
Mr. Johnson, is that acceptable?
Yeah, no objections.
Okay.
Mr. Giles, what's your position at CenturyLink?
I am the operations manager for North Dakota.
And what are your responsibilities?
My responsibilities include managing the team that installs and repairs customer circuits. Essentially, I have the field technicians that reside in North Dakota for our company.
And Mr. and Mrs. Gerbig are served out of the Belfield Exchange, is that correct?
Yes.
And are you aware of a settlement agreement that was reached with the commission related to service in this area in 2016?
I am. I just want to point out I was not in my current role at the time of the settlement agreement, but I have read the agreement and am familiar with the work that CenturyLink performed at that time.
Okay. And in that settlement, CenturyLink committed to place certain fiber in the area. Did it do so?
Yes. We placed fiber network both north and south of Belfield. To the north, I want to say it extended up to the Fairfield area, and to the south, it extended about 18 miles straight south of Belfield.
CenturyLink also committed to rehabilitating 10 cables, eight of which are in the Belfield Exchange. Did CenturyLink do that work, and can you describe what that work was?
Yes, I can. So that is referring to our copper cables that were pre-existing prior to the placement of our fiber network. So depending on where the customers live will determine which network their service resides on, whether it's the fiber or the copper. Specifically regarding our copper network and the cables that support our copper customers, we did do extensive work on those cables. That work included replacing bad sections of cable. We've re-spliced damaged pairs from rodents and weather. We've replaced damaged pedestals, and we checked the bonding and grounding along the cable run.
Overall, what impact did that work have on the quality of service provided in the Belfield Exchange and to the customers the customers in that area?
It's my understanding the network build that we did have significantly improved the service results in the area. We've seen a great reduction in the number of repair tickets and complaints from that 2018 timeframe to now.
And are Mr. and Mrs. Gerbig on one of the routes that was rehabilitated as a part of that project?
Yes, their dial tone service, and to point out, they do just have dial tone with us. They do not have high-speed internet. Their dial tone service does reside on one of the copper cables. Their cable was one of the cables that we worked on to improve service and reliability of their dial tone.
And could you describe the copper circuit, how long it is, and also explain why they're not connected to the fiber that runs south of Belfield?
Absolutely. The Gerbigs are a very, very long way out of our Belfield office. It was, as we looked at it, almost 37 miles or slightly over 37 miles out of our central office, which is located right in Belfield. Because of that great distance over the copper cable that serves their residents, we have to amplify and repeat that dial tone signal in order for it to reach that distance. Unfortunately, the fiber build that runs south of Belfield did stop about 18 miles away from their residence, so we could not utilize the fiber network that was recently placed there back in the 2016-2017 timeframe as a means to provide them their dial tone service. Simply the technology to push dial tone through the fiber will not reach the remaining distance between where our fiber terminates and their residence. So their service does reside on the copper service that spans the 37 miles.
Could you describe for us the cause of the problems that Mr. and Mrs. Gerbig have experienced and what your team has done about them?
Yes. Prior to my filling this role that I currently have, our records indicated that we did have to replace a section of copper cable along their run back in the March timeframe. We identified where that was. We replaced the section of cable, and that restored their service. Then the next instance where we learned of an issue was in the June timeframe. We've got one service technician that works the Belfield Dickinson area, and he had reached out to his supervisor asking for some assistance on the electronics. Now, the electronics, I'm going to use generically, it's the equipment that actually breaks out their dial tone service off of our copper cable. He was struggling trying to fix the electronics that serves the Gerbigs. And at the time, back in June, we did get him in contact with our tech support team. And through their combined efforts, they were able to restore service on that particular issue that the Gerbigs were having. Then the bigger issue occurred toward the end of August, early September. We had heard from the Gerbigs that, again, their dial tone was not working. And that really started a series of repair efforts that my technician and a couple technicians that we borrowed from the Bismarck Mandan area started replacing the repeaters in the electronics. We spent a number of hours replacing those repeaters, trying to restore service throughout the month of September, a few occurrences in October. And then again, we made another effort just ahead of the Thanksgiving week in order to try to restore service. And that met with varying degrees of success. It seemed like every time our technicians would replace those repeaters, we would be able to restore service for the Gerbigs. Unfortunately, in some cases for just a short period of time, and then their service would drop again, or they would have static or interference on their line.
So sort of the status quo, if we continue to try and patch the facilities as they are today, would you expect that we would have problems that would continue?
Yes, we're very limited with our ability to repair the electronics at this point. And again, that electronics is what provides them their dial tone. We've replaced the equipment along the line, and we don't feel that the cable is much of the issue. Most of it does reside in the electronics itself. And we've actually spent upwards of 90 hours, I calculated, technician hours on the repairs for the Gerbig since that September time frame. So,
have you explored sort of more permanent solutions that could ensure that the Gerbigs would receive their voice service?
Yes, we did. We had discussions with both our planning and engineering teams about other solutions. We looked at a possible fiber solution. Obviously, fiber would be the top of the line that we could provide to them, but it's really cost prohibitive to provide fiber the great distance out to the Gerbigs. We also explored other options, such as utilizing those same copper lines and essentially just replacing the electronics that I've mentioned with a different manufacturer, a different vendor, if you will. But even in that scenario, it would not guarantee that their service would be any more reliable than what they're experiencing today, unfortunately. And then one of the options, as Mr. Topp mentioned in his opening statement, is we did look at the possibility of providing satellite cell phones to the Gerbigs as a suitable replacement as well.
And did you also look at, I think you mentioned it earlier, but you also looked at whether wireless was an option for the Gerbigs as well?
We did. We had a cell site, I believe the cell site is owned by Verizon, that was recently turned up at about that 18-mile mark south of Belfield, sort of in the vicinity where our fiber optic cable ends. We knew that we had a Verizon cell tower recently turn up. Now, this is land-based cell service that we're all familiar with. So when my technicians were out along with their supervisor replacing repeaters for the Gerbigs, we were testing the capability of that new cell tower. And unfortunately, it just does not reach to the Gerbig residents. The terrain there, right where the cell tower is located, is mostly farm fields and nice and flat. But as you move further west and southwest of that cell tower, the terrain drops off into the badlands, if you will, of North Dakota, and the Gerbig residents does not have good line of sight to that cell tower, and we could not get service at their residence just using regular land-based cell phones.
So which option do you recommend to ensure that the Gerbigs are able to make the emergency calls that are of concern here?
I think probably the quickest option and most economically feasible from my perspective, Mr. Topp, would be the satellite cell phone option.
And how quickly could we make those available both to the Gerbigs and the two other customers that are served by this line?
We have the cell phones actually in Mandan right now. We're just waiting for the SIM cards for those cell phones to arrive. We anticipate the SIM cards will arrive in Mandan today, and then my supervisor is prepared to deliver the Gerbigs their cell phone yet today, if possible.
And when you say cell phone, you're referring to a satellite phone, not sort of the wireless phone that we are typically used to. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
That concludes my questions for Mr. Giles.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Topp. Mr. Johnson, do you have any questions for this witness?
I do. Mr. Giles, you talked about having acknowledgement of the settlement agreement. Do you know, was there federal or other funding dollars provided for that project?
You know, sir, I'm not fully vested in the funding of it. I may defer that to our team to break out where the funding did come from. There is a likely possibility that some CAF funding was involved with that build, but I do not have the exact breakout of funding that was provided for that build.
Okay. And you stated that you believe the copper line itself is adequate. It's an issue of repeaters.
Yes, so the repeaters, yes, I consider that a true statement. The repeaters are part of what I generically called the electronics. It's a pair gain system, and I don't want to get too far down into the weeds, but it's a system that works off of the copper cables that run the 37 miles. From that 37 miles, we can break out customer dial tones from those electronics. The reason why I feel pretty confident that the copper cable has been adequately maintained is that part of the settlement agreement that Mr. Topp alluded to in his opening statement was the rehabilitation of the copper. We had hired some contractors that went pedestal by pedestal along that entire cable run, and they did do some pretty extensive copper work for us, fixing some exposed cable pairs that potentially were damaged by rodent chews and weather. We had some pedestals that were cracked, or the cases or the lids were missing. Those were all replaced. And every time since the August-September timeframe of this year that our technicians went out to troubleshoot their service, we would also include troubleshooting on the copper cable. And not one time did the copper indicate that it was the issue. So we're pretty confident that our issue is with our pair gain system or the electronics that I alluded to.
Okay. Why aren't you able to get that pair gain system to work, or why aren't these repairs working?
Probably our number one challenge is finding maintenance spare equipment. So the equipment for that particular model of pair gain system is no longer available for us to purchase. The manufacturer no longer makes the repair parts. So what we've been able to do is reutilize some of those repeaters from other like type systems that we have turned down in other areas. So we find what we can from spare parts from other areas. We've brought them out to the Belfield technician, and then he has attempted to make the repairs for the Gerbigs. And we're just at a point where finding additional spare parts is just not feasible.
Is there not a way to replace those so that it would work as normal with newer equipment that does have, current parts for repair?
Yes. So one of the options that we discussed with our planning and engineering team was doing just that. Placing different electronics, different pair gain system, if you will. The problem with that was really twofold. One, we're utilizing the same copper cable that runs the 37 miles back to Belfield. So because of that, we just can't guarantee that that is going to provide any more of a stable platform than what they have experienced with the current system. Now, obviously, we would hope that it would provide a little more stability, but for a long-term perspective, just replacing the pair gain, utilizing that same copper network, I cannot guarantee that would be a more stable service for the customers there.
So
that was one of the options we did consider, absolutely.
Okay, so it is safe to say then that the copper is part of the problem as well.
Well, copper at 37 miles is a problem anywhere because it is subject to things like lightning strikes, Water damage, anytime water gets into a copper cable, whether it be through a nicked cut in our sheathing, you have so many potentials that could go awry, especially over a cable run that expansive. So, I mean, it's what we've had for years. That's how we provided service before fiber optics came along, was to maintain copper cables, and we still have that ability. It's just subject to a number of things that potentially could happen.
You stated that they just have dial tone service and that they don't have high-speed internet service. Are you capable of providing them with high-speed internet service at this point?
No, unfortunately, we cannot. Our high-speed internet service does not travel the attenuation. It just does not have the signal strength to reach that distance from the Belfield office, unfortunately.
I guess that's all the questions I have.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. We'll now move to the commissioners for questioning. Commissioner Christman.
When you mentioned that fiber to the Gerbig residence is cost prohibitive, how much does that mean? If you determine it's prohibitive, you must have figured out how much it would cost.
Yes, our planning department did give us a rough cost estimate, and it came out on the north side of $1 million. I want to say their estimate was about $1.3 million to extend the fiber from the endpoint out to the Gerbig residence.
And the endpoint, it's been a while since I drove on that highway going south of Belfield. When you say 18 miles south, I think you said 18 miles south of Belfield that the fiber went, what is 18 miles south of there? Is that where the end of Billings County is, or why 18 miles?
Do you know, sir, I don't know if it correlates with anything along those lines. I don't have the exact answer as to the reason why they stopped at that point. My guess would be that as part of the build when they placed the fiber the 3 years ago or so, is that they looked at where they could gain additional customers and benefit additional customers. And it was decided that that was the point where they would terminate the placement of the fiber. And they placed, I believe, at that location what we call a DSLAM, which is, again, a piece of electronics that provides dial tone and internet service for customers over the fiber.
Have you had good take on internet from the customers out there that are able to connect into the fiber?
Do you know, sir, I don't have our exact take rate. My guess is yes. I'm sure that we took a pretty good share of the customers once that fiber was turned up, because it prior to the fiber being placed, again, those customers that far out from Belfield probably did not qualify for high-speed internet over our copper cable. So I'm sure that they were happy to get high-speed internet.
Does your service territory to the south of the Gerbig residence, does your territory end at the Belfield-Slope County line, or what is the line there between you and Consolidated?
Do you know, I'll tell you, when we looked at the map for the Gerbig residence, their physical address is right up against our wire center boundary. We do not serve the city of Elblon?
Abaddon?
Is that Abaddon, which is actually the Gerbig address. When you look at their address, that's their mailing address is that city. We do not have customers that far out, and the Gerbigs are literally as far to the west and as far to the south as we serve customers out of the Belfield Exchange.
Yeah, well, Amadon would be in Slo. That's a whole different county, and it's a ways south of their place, I think. I guess I'm not 100% sure where they live, but are there any other CenturyLink residences near the Gerbig residence that are struggling, that are on this copper line?
Yes, sir. Although I don't believe they were named in this particular complaint, there are actually three customers that we serve on this problematic pair gain system that I've been referring to. It's the Gerbig residents, I believe a relative of the Gerbigs by the same last name, and then a third customer, and their name escapes me, but that's why, as part of our proposal, as Mr. Topp outlined, is we are prepared to provide the satellite cell phones for all three of those customers.
How old is that copper line from Belfield to their place?
Sir, I do not have an age on the copper line. My guess is it's been in the ground for quite some time. Now, we do, when we have damaged cable, we'll replace sections of damaged cable. For example, if a backhoe were to strike part of the cable, we would replace sections of it. But the entire length of the 37 miles has probably been in the ground for a number of years, would be my guess. We could get that information from our engineering team if you wanted the exact dates of when that cable was placed.
I'd kind of like that, or at least something a little closer, and maybe you can answer this. As I recall, maybe kind of in the 90s, Qwest sold some of these more rural call center areas, a lot of them to the co-ops around the state, and this one apparently just didn't. But at that time, a lot of the copper network was considered pretty old. So when you say for a number of years, are we talking about like quite a few decades, like 50 or 60 years, do you think, or do you think it's far newer than that?
Do you know, sir, it would be a pure guess on my part. I guess I would defer from giving a date. I don't believe we've placed copper cable along that stretch, at least in the recent time, especially with the fact that we've placed fiber. Our company philosophy has kind of pivoted to where we look for fiber solutions first, and at a last resort, we would prefer not to place copper cables any longer. It would be a pure guess, and I'd hesitate to give you a date on when that copper cable was actually placed and put into service. It potentially could be decades, though. You're probably not far off of your guess.
I would like if you can dig that up, because, well, the exact year doesn't matter. I guess what I'm struggling with, and I sure don't quarrel with the company philosophy of transitioning to fiber where possible, but part of what I'm hearing from you, and you can correct me if I'm misunderstanding, part of what I'm hearing from you is quite a bit of confidence in the copper that it's the electronics, but then when we talk about replacing the electronics with a new system from a different vendor that would still provide parts and such, then you're not sure that's going to help, which tells me you're not very confident in the copper.
I guess my point would be that copper is more subject to potential repair issues than fiber cables. As I mentioned earlier, things like moisture getting into the cable can cause interference. rodent chews, we could have issues of bonding and grounding. Lightning it has a bigger effect on copper cables than they do on fiber cables, where you just don't have a copper conductor running through the fiber cable. So it is more subject to potential issues, and I guess I just did not want to set a false premise that if we just replace electronics utilizing those copper cables, that it's going to be the end all and be a more guaranteed service than what they've experienced today. I can't make that guarantee to you, I guess, is the point that I was trying to make.
Okay. And in my not very precise notes, I had down that you had said that the fiber was cost prohibitive and that the new electronics from a different vendor would not guarantee improvement. So did you determine that there just was no real guarantee of improvement because of what you just explained with copper and cease the exploration there? Or did you ever get an estimate of the cost of replacing the electronics if it was determined that the copper was worth maintaining?
Yes, sir, we did. Again, in our discussions with our planning and engineering team, we did ask if there was a suitable electronics replacement option. And again, the electronics that would be a replacement, although it's from a different vendor and manufacturer, that too is, you know, that type of technology just is not brand new. It's an older type of technology as well. And the cost estimate that our teams came up with just to replace the electronics was in the neighborhood of $150,000. Again, I guess it's probably easy for me to say, to me, that would be a cost prohibitive as well when we're talking about the total impact for just three customers that would be served from that service.
Mr. Topp mentioned the Rural Digital Opportunity Fund auction. Did CenturyLink participate in that and trying to get some of the whatever, I can't remember the term for the dollars that were available for the prevailing bidders in that, but did CenturyLink participate and seek that?
Commissioner, this is Jason Topp. If it would be okay, I'd prefer to have Mr. Schreiner respond to questions about Rural Digital Opportunity Fund. We're in a quiet period and there are a series of rules about what can and cannot be discussed. I think Mr. Schreiner would be able to answer your questions.
Okay, thank you. Will you be available to be recalled after Mr. Schreiner and potentially after Ms. Gerby testify in case we have more questions?
Oh, if that's directed to me, yes, I'll be available as long as we need.
Okay. And then tell me about satellite phones. I mean, off the top, that sounds good, but here's what I'm imagining. The annoyance that I feel or felt a few years ago when I would watch the reporters calling in with their remote reports from the mountains of Afghanistan or somewhere, and every time the reporter on this end would ask a question, there was that long delay until they'd get it, and then they'd answer, and there was a long delay. And is that what these three customers are going to experience with a satellite phone?
Do you know, sir, I cannot provide that answer. I do not have operational experience utilizing satellite phones myself. I do not know if there is a delay in their operation or not, to be honest.
What do they look like? Are we talking about some great big thing with a backpack or something like that, or is it look like a cell phone?
It pretty much, from the one image that I did receive from my supervisor in Mandan, it looks very much like a cell phone with one addition to it. To the side of the phone is what appears to be an antenna that you can, I assume, flip up. That is probably the antenna that would connect to the satellites.
Sounds like they've come a long way since I was in the Guard.
Yeah.
Like so much technology. But I think that's all my questions, Mr. Giles. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you, Commissioner Christman. Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, to follow up a little bit on Randy's questions, Mr. Giles, you said you aren't, you know, real familiar with the satellite service, but can you re-describe what it is that you offer or are thinking of offering, as Mr. Topp kind of described that at the beginning, but I didn't get all of the details written down. Describe what the service will be and how it will function, kind of like similarly to just the plain old telephone.
I just received a brief description of the plan that that we are offering this morning. So I'm looking at that. The company is Inmarsat. The phones are Inmarsat 2 phones. I assume that's a model number of the Inmarsat phone. The battery life should be up to 8 hours of talk time and up to 160 hours of standby time. It operates at a negative 20 degrees Celsius up to 55 degrees Celsius temperature range. The phones will be activated with a prepaid 3,333 minutes plan, which is the highest plan available, and I believe the caller will receive a remaining minutes alert that'll be heard before each call, so they should be able to clearly hear what is remaining for them on that on their plan. And that CenturyLink is planning to pay for the handsets and the calling plans for a period of time, and that they will be assigned a 701 area code on those three phones. And that's the extent of the information that I have on the satellite phones, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you. That's helpful. And the phones will work from their residence, and where will they be stationed, and where will they be effective? Any place?
That is my understanding. So the advantage of using satellite phones is they're not connecting to a land-based cell tower, such as the one that was recently turned up by Verizon. So as long as the satellite phone can have you know, some type of line of sight to the satellites overhead, it should connect. Now, I've asked my supervisor in the Mandan office to conduct some test calls once he gets the phones out to the Gerbigs, and he plans to show them how to utilize the phone as well. So we will know whether or not we've got a, you know, successful phone service from their residence when he gets out there with the phones. But yeah, that's our hope, is that they're going to be able to work from their residence. I assume that it's a mobile phone to where they should be able to carry it, you know, in a vehicle. I'm not sure about, you know, the roof of a vehicle, if that would cause interference. I assume it would not, just as the building materials of their home would not necessarily cause interference as well. But I, again, the capabilities of the phones, I'm not all that familiar with myself.
Okay. Is Mr. Schreiner able to answer some of the technical capabilities and limitations of the satellite phone? And if not, maybe in the time that we have between now and then, somebody from the company can get in that information, because it doesn't strike me as being overly difficult to get a handle on the pros and cons of the satellite phones. If there are any limitations, what are they? And, you know, what's the quality of service, et cetera? I think I like Commissioner Cushman, would like to have that information today, if possible.
We will seek the information.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Mr. Giles, have you had any conversations with the customer or any of these customers about the satellite phone option?
Not yet. I have not spoken with the customer. Our intent was to get the phones to them as early as we could, and we've had a little bit of delay in the shipping of them to the Mandan office, and now we're waiting for the SIM cards, very similar to our land-based cell phones. It needs the SIM card installed before the phone will work. Once he receives those, and we do expect the delivery today, then he's going to do some test calls from Mandan and then contact the customer and let them know that he is en route to their home with the phone.
Okay, thank you. what's the cost on the satellite phone option?
Mr.
For the company, obviously.
Yeah.
Cost on that?
I can double check and submit the exact number, but my recollection is that it was going to cost in the area of $3,400 per unit.
And for the 2-year time period?
I think that's for the minutes. But let me confirm. I will double check.
Okay. All right. So about, so say approximately $10,000 to satisfy those customers out there for the 3,333 minutes. And do you have an estimate for how many minutes these customers tend to use? How long will those minutes last, I guess?
We don't know. Specifically with these customers, we're not tied to that limitation on what we're offering. We thought that we would work with them to make sure that they have adequate.
Sure. I was just trying to get a handle on what the total cost might be of this solution. So, Mr. Giles, did you said that you've had 90 hours of staff time devoted to trying to fix this problem?
Yes, ma'am.
To date. Okay. And we've had, I don't know what Stacy's consumed in terms of hours, but a fair amount of time in hours on our end too. And I don't know if that 90 hours includes your customer service reps as well, dealing with Stacy and the back and forth there. And I know Commissioner Chrisman, who's a portfolio holder on telecom, has spent time working with Stacy and Brian on this issue. And I am the consumer affairs portfolio holder, and I've spent time with Stacy dealing with this issue as well. And so, I mean, conservatively, we have spent well over 100 hours, probably 125 hours, all of us working on this and throwing this hearing where there's 10 people minimum working on this issue probably with everybody's staff time and considering some of them are attorneys, they probably bill a lot more than some of the rest of us. Probably $100 an hour would be an average fair average cost per employee. So we're probably looking at $5,000 to $10,000 just for today to deal with this issue, which is roughly commensurate to the cost of the solution that you're today providing. So what's frustrating to me is that this is what it takes to get this solution on the table. This has been going on for years. Why couldn't you guys have come forward with this solution months ago or years ago? I mean, I don't think any of us are expecting you to go out there and put in broadband to this customer or fix outdated systems that aren't going to be a long-term solution on the copper stuff. So it's mind-boggling to me that you guys would spend 90 hours of your time alone on solutions that you know month after month aren't working. They're not lasting. When there's other options like the satellite phone that could very well be a functional option until the technology evolves further and they can use cell service or something else. So, I mean, I'm not just sitting here trying to scold you, but why has it taken this long for you guys to come to the table with this solution?
Ma'am, I'm not going to sugarcoat the situation. I do know that it's not a first option to immediately look at replacement options when customers have service interruptions. In fact, my team takes great pride in maintaining the equipment and network that we've got that does provide service. Our first option is to always try to fix what we've already invested, and we already have that equipment in place. It's my team's responsibility to try to fix and maintain that. And that's one of our purposes, along with installing new service for customers. But you're right, at a certain point, we just are out of the ability to maintain some of this older equipment. And then we are in a situation such as today where we're talking about having to come up with a replacement option because we simply cannot maintain that equipment any longer. Our company-wide has various degrees of aged equipment. Although it's not new equipment, it still works adequately. I would say the majority of the time, our uptime and our service standards are very high, and we pride ourselves in that. But there is a certain point when we get to a system like the one that serves the Gerbigs where we are at diminishing returns, and my team just cannot maintain it. Unfortunately, those situations are never easy, especially for the customer. And I hope that is not lost on the commission. I feel for those customers. I understand the importance of dial tone, and I couldn't echo the sentiments than your counterpart with his opening statement talking about the importance of basic dial tone service. In fact, we try to emphasize that with all of our customers all of the time, that they should always look to take a landline service in addition to any other products that they have from us. So we understand the importance of it, and we certainly understand the impact when a customer is without service and what a life impact that is on them. But as far as making decisions earlier on in the decision matrix to replace equipment, we simply could not afford to do that as a corporation. The first few times that a customer has service impact, we try to maintain that equipment, and we do that for successfully for many years. But at certain points, the equipment just cannot be maintained any longer. And unfortunately, that's where we're at with this particular pair gain system?
Well, I appreciate that. I think we're well beyond the time of reasonable where you should have been looking at different options, because it's pretty clear that stuff wasn't working. I mean, I'm not even in the business, and I was asking months ago, like, there's got to be something else that would work to serve these customers. So, you know, it's always discouraging. We try to give companies the benefit of the doubt here and to work with folks, but it's always discouraging when we have dissatisfied customers who have been patient and working with people for companies for a long time, and it takes us bringing you to a hearing to get action. And here we are, the day of the hearing, and we have a solution. So it teaches us a lesson about what it takes to get responsiveness from CenturyLink, and we've learned this lesson before with you guys. So I hope we don't have to do it anymore. I hope we can resolve this, and you guys will be attentive to your remaining customers in North Dakota. We don't have to resort to taking action like this. But we're not to a solution yet, so I guess we'll continue on with the rest of the hearing. I don't have any more questions for you, Mr. Giles. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Fedorchuk. I just have a few questions myself, and it relates to some of the line of questioning on the cost of the satellite phone, and not to say that's the answer. I don't know yet, but just generally speaking, it isn't about covering the first several years, whatever the time frame is, if that were a settlement agreement that was put in place, but really about the cost of the phone and the cost of the monthly service fees. How long do the batteries typically last in those phones before they're replaced? And would it be similar? I think the general question, would it be similar in cost, do you know, to having a landline? Or would it be higher?
Sir, if that question is for me, as I've stated earlier, I am not an expert on the satellite phone capabilities. I did receive some brief information just prior to the hearing that I have already read off. The expected battery life is up to 8 hours of talk time and up to 160 hours of standby time. I don't have any other battery information regarding that. I do not have the price plan on what CenturyLink will be paying for the three cell phones or the cell plans. But certainly from our cost, the satellite option is certainly a larger cost to CenturyLink to provide this for those customers than for us to have their dial tone across their existing service, simply because that equipment has been paid for and it is already owned by CenturyLink, so providing them dial tone landline service obviously would be a cheaper cost for our company than providing the satellite cell phone options. Unfortunately, the existing electronics can no longer support their service, as I've stated earlier, and now it would require us to replace that electronics, which now is at a significantly higher cost than the satellite option.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, and Mr. Giles, I understand that the concern would be if it's a higher cost for you, and it's the same concern that's been expressed, and I realize you don't have the specific information, but if it's a higher cost for you to implement, does it also become a higher cost for the Gerbigs over the long term, after the period of time expires where service is covered from a cost standpoint? I don't know a lot about them. I know when I replaced battery on my phone, it's approximately $50. You know, is that similar, or are these units significantly higher for battery replacement cost, or when the units wear out, is it, you know, you had, I think, given a number on the cost of the phone itself, and because electronics don't last forever, and it's not about the short term, the next 2, 3, 4 years, but long term, if this becomes a very expensive option, that has to be factored in. So I look forward to having that detail provided. The only other thing I want to mention, you know, the Gerbigs are here today in the hearing room, and there's been a tremendous amount of discussion about time, cost on your end, and just to assure them that this is in no way, shape, or form an issue in terms of what you're asking for. So it almost sounds like it's become a burden for the company and others, and from a commission standpoint, rest assured, it certainly is not. So just so you know that. We'll now move into redirect. Mr. Topp, do you have any redirect?
I do not.
Okay, Mr. Johnson, any redirect for this witness?
I do briefly. With the satellite phones, I'm assuming that they will lose reverse 911 capabilities and location services that they would have otherwise through the 911 system.
Again, I would prefer not to answer because I am not an expert on the satellite phones. I think we should probably get that answer for you along with the other questions that you have regarding the satellite phones.
That's fine.
My guess would be that they access the 911 system much like any other cell phone does. But I just cannot testify to that without having knowledge of it myself.
Sure. When did the idea to replace or to use satellite phones as an option come up?
It came up as an option as we were working with our planning and engineering teams to talk about the other options. And you know, we had the three primary options that we had discussed: the fiber option and the cost associated with building fiber out to the Gerbigs, replacing the electronics on the existing copper system and network, and the cost associated with that, and then the satellite phone option as a third option.
Sure. I'm going to ask you this time to answer my question. How long ago did this discussion happen? A week, 2 weeks, a month, 3 months? I didn't ask what the other options were. I asked when this was happening.
Oh, when? I'm sorry. I misunderstood your question. We probably had the first conversations in the mid-November timeframe when my team had made the determination that we were out of options as far as trying to repair the existing pair gain system that serves them.
Okay. That's all the redirect I have.
Okay. Commissioner Chrisman.
In a previous life, for me, the telecommunications company had some areas with some of these copper facilities and the electronics that were just deemed too much to maintain, and this was pre fiber to the home project, and got service to those people with a wireless system. And I don't know all the details of it so well, but you had talked about the cell tower that was there not either being too far away or not having good enough line of sight connection to the Gerbig residence to be effective. But as I recall, that company also ran into some of that kind of thing where it was either too far or didn't provide line of sight. And there were instances where they had to go out and maybe get right of way from a neighbor or two and put a pole up somewhere. And it was, as I recall, pretty simple wooden poles with just a little repeater or something on there that just took it from one to the next, and within some reasonable amount, you could provide it landline service in a wireless method, and it worked pretty well at a pretty low cost. Is that an impossibility, or was that explored to maybe not get completely from that satellite tower to their home, but maybe do it with one or two additional locations in between?
Sir, it was not considered in our discussions simply because that cell provider is another company. CenturyLink does not own a wireless cell service ourselves. So the service that I was referring to, I believe, is Verizon. Those conversations with Verizon, if they would consider building additional cell sites or repeater sites, as you are referring to, has not been discussed.
No, but could CenturyLink put a repeater site or two between the Verizon tower and the Gerbig place with just a wooden pole and some equipment on top of it? Or is it much more complicated than I'm thinking?
It's probably more complicated simply because we are not authorized to repeat another company's signal, without some type of agreement or partnership. It would have to be run through Verizon, would be my guess. And I'm not an expert on those types of negotiations. That's outside my responsibilities, but that would be my best guess is why it would be extremely difficult, simply because we cannot repeat their service or their signal without their involvement.
And a system like I tried to explain there, would that be a possibility if you, instead of going off of Verizon's tower, took off from where your fiber ends 18 miles south of Belfield? Or did you say that fiber signal can't be switched into the wireless system that we'd be talking about?
We don't have any capability of running wireless where our fiber equipment terminates, but there is a type of card that we can place in that electronics where the fiber does terminate. Unfortunately, when we discussed it with our engineering team, dial tone will attenuate in a much shorter distance than reaching all the way out to the Gerbigs. So that is not a viable option to run dial tone service from the equipment where our fiber terminates. It would attenuate, or it would simply just not work to that great distance.
Okay. And then lastly, on this solution that you're proposing with the satellite phones, you mentioned there would be assigned a 701 area code, but what's the term for the next three numbers? That's the NXX code, right?
Sir, I do not have that answer for you. I have not seen what phone numbers are going to be assigned to the cell phones, to the satellite phones.
Because if that, the next three, that's called the NXX code, right?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So if they didn't have a Belfield NXX code, then they would potentially have long distance to call places like Belfield and the places that if their landline was working now, they wouldn't have to have long distance for. Am I correct? Or do these satellite phones, does this plan work like a cell phone where there just is no long distance?
I keep mentioning this. I'm not an expert on the operations of the satellite phones, but it would be my guess that they have full long distance capability. Whether the customer would have to dial a 10-digit number or just a 7-digit number, I guess I am not sure on the operation of that.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchak, any further questions for this witness?
I do not have any more questions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And I don't as well. Any other further questions from anyone else? Okay. Seeing none, you may step down. Mr. Giles and Mr. Topp, before you call your next witness, I'd like to take a brief break. And we will reconvene at, just to make this a little bit easier, we'll reconvene at 22. Thank you. All right. Thank you, Matthew. We are back on the record. It is 10:42 a.m. Mr. Topp, you may call your next witness.
Thank you, Chairman Kroshes. We have, in light of some of the questions regarding the working of satellite phone, have reached out during the break and asked Mr. Rick Gutierrez to appear as a witness. Rick's who has been involved in, we have used this solution in some other places where similar types of issues have come up. Rick's been involved in that process. Certainly not a technical person, however, is familiar with the plans, the offer, and how it has worked. And so we'll call Mr. Rick Gutierrez.
Will you please state your name for the record and spelling as well, please?
Sure. It's Rick Gutierrez. R-I-C-K is my first name. G-U-T-I-E-R-R-E-Z.
Okay. And I do not, were you on listening and did you hear my previous warning as to perjury?
No.
Okay, Mr. And can you please one more time, is it Gutierrez? Or pronounce your name one more time for me, please.
Gutierrez. Perfect. You said it right.
Okay. Mr. Gutierrez, I'm required by law to tell you the penalties for perjury in this state. Perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine of up to $10,000 or a term of imprisonment of up to 5 years or both. Do you understand what perjury is and the penalties for it?
Yes.
Understanding so, do you promise or swear that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Okay. You are the only participant in this conference. Press any key to continue this conference.
Okay, thank you. You may begin.
Thank you for joining us this morning, Mr. Gutierrez. Could you tell the commission and us your position and responsibilities within CenturyLink?
Sure thing. Currently, I'm the public policy manager for compliance of various topics and subject matters. I handle cable franchise-related issues. And we've got 155 cable franchises across the country. There's an additional responsibility for what we call product rationalization, identifying.
You are the only participant in this conference. Press any key to continue this conference.
1 second, my apologies.
No, you're fine.
The conference will now continue.
Are we squared away?
Should be.
Okay, you can continue.
So I assist in identifying where our network is best laid out and where we have opportunities to expand or update our network. And as it relates to today's proceedings, I help our regional teams identify solutions when there's a local emergency, whether it's weather-related, fire-related, or in some instances, service outage-related, and identify opportunities for our customers for continuity of service.
Thank you, Mr. Gutierrez. Has that option on occasion in the past included the use of satellite phones?
Yes, frequently.
And could you describe sort of the plans, how they work, what the customer would experience in using a satellite phone?
Sure. Depending on the situation, we have several options from which to choose with our satellite service provider. There are emergency use plans where we send out satellite phones to a customer or an area where they may be only needed. The customer has wireless service. The wireless service is substantial for the customer to make their ingoing and outbound calls, but the wireline service for some reason has gone out, maybe in a hurricane or a tornado ridden area. And we will send the a sat phone to a customer so that they have a backup to use as an emergency. And in that case, we'll set up the satellite phone with a minimal amount of minutes, let the customer know you've got 100 minutes per month to use this phone. And it's, you know, understood that that's a backup to their other service that they might have available. In other cases, like we propose in North Dakota, we've got a higher minute plan from which we can choose so that the, rather than an emergency based option, the sat phone is intended to be used when you need to make a call, whether it's to order groceries or talk to your cousin.
And does this satellite phone work in essentially the same manner as a landline phone that, that, as far as what the customer would experience, what are the similarities, what are the differences?
Well, the similarities are we're able to assign a 10-digit phone number to each phone when we establish service, when we activate the sat phones. Our satellite phone provider allows us to select the area code, 1+ dialing number, and we put on that phone so we can get a local calling area, local phone number for the customer. That's one of the similarities. You know, 10-digit dial, you pick up the phone and dial your friend or neighbor just like you would on your home phone. You've got to have it charged up, so it's like a cell phone in that matter. The phones that we send out have 8 hours of talk time on the battery life and 16 hours if they're just on standby. So they're like a cell phone in that instance. Unlike your home phone that's hanging on your wall, you can take this with you out to the barn, or you can drive to town and take your phone. If you get a flat tire between here and there, you can use your satellite phone out on the road or really anywhere on the planet that can pick up a satellite signal. So it's a little more like a cell phone in that matter, but with greater coverage area, ubiquitous coverage area, because it's picking up satellites.
There were questions earlier in the hearing regarding latency or the delay between when one person talks and the other person can hear. How is that a bit different than what you'd experience on a wireless phone?
There are latencies in all communications, I would say, and maybe the latency between a satellite phone and the satellite and back to the Earth station is a small percentage higher than a cell phone that's going from your house to a tower and then to another customer. But we've not had any customers complain about latency or the inability to communicate with someone due to a gap or a space in the communication.
The phones that we've acquired for these three customers, there were questions about how much that was going to cost the company. And I know that it depends somewhat on minutes, but could you give the commission an idea of the type of cost that that would be to the company?
Yeah, the individual satellite phone, but I looked at the chart yesterday, are $759 per phone. And that's a one-time charge. There's a $10 per month fee to us when we select a specific area code to assign to those phone numbers. And then again, depending on which calling plan we select for the situation, there are monthly plans, there's an annual plan. And what we've selected is the highest amount plan for North Dakota. It's a what the sat phone company calls a 5,000 unit prepaid plan, which equates to 3,333 minutes. And it's $3,500, $3,540.
Okay, well, Mr. Gutierrez, I appreciate you jumping on this in short notice. I think at this point, I'm going to stop my direct examination and give others the opportunity to ask the questions that they have to the extent we have not addressed them.
Thank you, Mr.
Gutierrez, that's 3,333 minutes per month, per year?
Total. So these are prepaid phones. The SIM card is assigned 3,333 minutes. The user will hear the amount of minutes left in their prepaid plan, which CenturyLink's going to pay for. Whenever they activate and make a phone call, they'll know how many minutes they have left. CenturyLink will receive a warning or a notice or an email from the satellite phone company when 500 minutes are left on the prepaid plan. And then at that point, we can renew the 3,000-minute plan.
So it can have minutes added to it later. It's not like once you're out of your 3,000 minutes or whatever that you're done. It can be, let's say if they burn through that in 3 months, at that point you'd be able to re-up for another 3,000?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. No further questions.
But there, we're talking about CenturyLink's cost for providing service. These three customers would continue paying the amount that they've paid traditionally for their landline service when it's working, correct?
That's my understanding. You know, if the phone service is up and running and working, they can still use their home phone.
Okay. And then the... someone else previously mentioned the 8 hours of talk time on the battery and 160 hours of standby time. And I think you said 16 hours of standby time. I need to understand which of those it is. It seems like 16 is pretty short.
Charts. Yeah. 160 hours is the accurate time. I don't know where 16 came from. I apologize.
You'd only need to apologize
for the Inmarsat 2 phone.
You'd only need to apologize if it was 16. So this is good news. Thanks for clarifying. And I don't think I have any other questions for you. Appreciate you calling in.
Okay, I just have it's more of a general question, and so I understand the nature of a prepaid phone card, but generally speaking, it sounds like it's significantly more expensive to have this type of a phone system in place than a landline. Would that be an accurate statement?
Yes.
So when that period of time that this is covered by the company ends, then the Gerbigs would incur significantly higher cost as well.
If they acquired their own satellite phone, they would incur that cost. We're paying for this one.
Right. Okay. Okay. I don't have any other questions. And Commissioner Fedorchuk, I apologize. I know you're on a tight time frame. So do you have any questions for this witness?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do not. I just wanted to confirm, though, that the company's proposal is that they will be providing this cell phone and the minutes, or the satellite phone and the minutes, as basically the local service. And so the bill that the customer pays will be the same as what they would pay for their local service.
Yes, that's true.
Okay. All right. I have no more questions. I do want to mention to all participating that I'm going to have to drop off on the active participation. I'm still going to continue participating from a monitoring standpoint, so I'll be listening. And I do hope to be able to get to a place to ask this on the road, but I'm not sure about that. So thank you so much. Okay. Know that I am still listening, though, and monitoring this closely. Thank you.
Okay. And Commissioner Fedorchuk, just let us know when you're available again to ask questions, and we'll make sure that we give you the opportunity to do so. Commissioner Crispin, you had another question?
Yeah, a couple that I missed. So clarify for me again, they would be assigned a 701 area code, but would they get a Belfield NXX number, or would this satellite phone replace their existing phone that they'd have their number that's published in the directory, but it would be on the satellite? Or explain what kind of a numbering system is involved.
Now, the satellite phone will give us a 701 area code. The likelihood that it's a local number is, I haven't seen the numbers, but I doubt that's the case. So it'll be a 701 area code. We can set up a forwarding service so that anyone calls their home number, the that home number is forwarded to their cell phone. That's a service that's available on everybody's home phone service that we can activate in the central office. So when you call one of these three customers, their satellite phone will ring.
And does the satellite phone work with 911 service and reverse 911?
Yeah, these sat phones, phone numbers will be in the database just like any other phone, whether it's a cell phone or a home phone. And when a reverse 911 call is activated, this phone number will be included.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
All right, we'll now move to redirect. Mr. Topp?
No redirect from me.
Mr. Johnson?
No redirect.
And one more time, I believe Commissioner Fedorchuk is in listen only. Commissioner Crisman?
No, sir.
And I don't have any as well. Seeing no further questions, Mr. Gutierrez, you are free to step down. And Mr. Topp, you may call your next witness.
Thank you, Chair Karasius. Before I do so, I did want to follow up. There was one question for Mr. Giles regarding the age of the copper running out along this route. And apparently that was placed in 1977, is what I'm being told. So I just wanted to offer that for information. Mr. Giles could answer questions to the extent there are more questions related to that. And then secondly, I'm assuming that the Exhibit 1 that we put in, is that a part of the record, or do I need to offer it? Just wanted to check with that.
We were actually going to, I'm getting a little bit of an echo, going to see if you would stipulate to Exhibits 1 through 4.
Yeah, and could someone describe for me what the other exhibits are? They may have been sent to me, but we were scrambling to get Mr. Gutierrez on the line.
Yeah, Mr. Johnson would do.
Sure. Mr. Sanderson had emailed me and said that the version when I sent them yesterday. He didn't get them. The first one, I guess, yours is Exhibit 1. Ours would be Exhibit A, just for clarity. It is the, I guess, it's the current complaint tracking history. It's just a what our complaint tracking history looks like. Next one is all the email correspondence with CenturyLink and Ms. Eberle or Ebril. Then we have the outage history and then all of our correspondence with Ms. Gerbig are the four exhibits.
Yeah, we're willing to stipulate to the admission of those. We would like to see the exhibits if it's possible to get them to us.
We do have them loaded, so as we talk about them, I can have them shared on the screen. But I'm hoping that that Mr. Sanderson got them and can get them to you in electronic form as well, so you can have them.
And Mr. Johnson, we still have – I didn't receive those exhibits via email yesterday, and I have not received them today. You know, for what – I don't know that the size is the issue or what, but we just have not seen those exhibits.
All right. If we get another break here before I get going, I'll try one more time.
Okay. Mr. Topp, perhaps after your next witness, we can see if you are at the point of being willing to stipulate to those exhibits at that time, if that is fair, before admitting them into the record.
That would be fine.
Okay. You may call your next witness.
So my next witness is Mr. Andy Schreiner.
Okay, Mr. Schreiner, will you state your name and spelling for the record, please?
Yes, it's Andrew Schreiner, A-N-D-R-E-W, S-C-H-R-I-N-E-R.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Schreiner, were you here for my previous warning as to perjury?
Yes, I was.
So you understand what perjury is and the penalties for it?
I do.
Understanding so, do you promise that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you. Mr. Schreiner, could you describe for us your title and your responsibilities with CenturyLink?
Yes, my title is Director of Legislative Affairs, Public Policy. I'm responsible for a region including North and South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan. I handle legislative issues, some regulatory issues, and just general public policy issues in those states.
Mr. Schreiner, the company has suggested that satellite is at least the best option for a longer solution for these customers. I mean, that's an unusual approach for this commission or for any commission to endorse that sort of approach. Why should the commission consider that option?
I think it's the most critical thing here is that the Gerbigs have 911 service and a reliable 911 service. And the satellite phone option presents the best option to get that service out to them in as quickly as possible.
And is this I think we've proposed a 2-year time period and then a reassessment at the end of those 2-year time periods for this approach. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think the 2-year time proposal should be viewed as reasonable because we're seeing things evolving fairly rapidly in the marketplace. We recently went through the Rural Digital Opportunities Fund auction. The location, the address of the Gerbigs was one that was won by a provider. It wasn't CenturyLink. That information is publicly available on the FCC website today. I have some limitations about what I can say about it because we are in a quiet period from the FCC. Additionally, you know, we're seeing things evolving. You know, the cell tower that went live a couple weeks ago, we really weren't aware that that was going on until we started the review of the situation of the Gerbig. So we're seeing cell towers being deployed more frequently, and there may be other options for them in 2 years. You have entities such as SpaceX with low orbit satellites that are going to be offering broadband and telecommunication services. So we think it'd be appropriate to take a look at things after 2 years, look at what new technologies may or may not have evolved, and then, you know, decide what the best course is in consultation with the commission.
Thank you, Mr. Schreiner. I don't have any more direct examination questions.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Johnson?
If the location that they were that they're at was just purchased, doesn't that mean that you guys won't be their provider here in the near future?
Another company has been awarded that area. They have, I think, up to 10 years to build service in that area. So that's why a review, I think, in 2 years might be appropriate to see what has happened.
Okay, so the fact that the bid has been won by somebody else doesn't necessarily mean that X date here in the near future it's going to be switched over to them. There's a pretty long, extensive period.
Potentially, there's up to 10 years.
Okay. That's all the questions I have.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Chrisman?
Was CenturyLink a participant in the RDOF bidding?
Yes, we were.
And just to be clear, if the successful bidder builds out here, that this build out isn't to take territory away from someone who has existing territory. It's just another competitor who would be in your territory, correct?
It'd be another competitor subsidized by the FCC, by the federal government. Yes,
right. But if they don't, it's still your territory, despite that auction was held and someone else prevailed.
I believe so. Yes.
So since you're a participant, I assume you have a lot better understanding of how that works than I. And with such a long build-out period, is there a requirement in that agreement that a bidder makes with the FCC that requires, you know, that 10% of it be done the first year, another 10% the next year, or some kind of movement like that, or you just have 10 years to do this?
There were some milestones, I believe, in the RDOF program, similar to the milestones in the CAF program. You had a certain amount of your commitment that had to be made at certain times. So I believe that is the case, that there are milestones that award winners have to meet.
And then I believe that the successful bidder in this area was successful on like 500,000 locations around the nation. Do you know if that's correct or close?
I don't know the number. I just know the name of the entity from looking at the FCC website yesterday.
Do you suspect that those milestones, let's just use that number and hope that it's halfway close. So if they have 500,000 around the nation, would you expect that the milestone requirement, whatever the first milestone is, that amount of build out has to be done in each of the areas that they were successful, or that it would be a certain percentage and somewhere in the nation they need to accumulate for that percentage?
I don't know the answer to that question. In CAF, it was state by state. I don't know how RDOF works as far as meeting the milestones.
Do you know whether this bidder was successful on any other areas in North Dakota?
You know, I only looked at the Belfield area yesterday on the map, so I'm not aware of other locations.
Okay. I think that's all my questions. When we're done, I'll have an additional question or two for Mr. Giles, but thank you, Andy.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Okay, and I don't have any questions for Mr. Schreiner. Any redirect, Mr. Johnson?
I do briefly.
Mr. Johnson, I apologize. Mr. Topp, I should start with you. Any redirect?
Yeah. No redirect from me.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Johnson?
Sure. It was discussed earlier that the Gerbigs are very close to another market. And I'm not 100% sure if it's even possible, but have you had conversations with that other provider about taking the Gerbigs over, or is that not something that's allowed?
I did have a conversation with one of the providers, but looking at the distance, I think to the west, the nearest facilities are 5 miles, and you have to traverse U.S. Forest Service National Grasslands to get there, which, you know, creates some challenges. It was the same issue, and I think looking to the south, the nearest thing I can see is the Burning Coal Vein campground, and you look south, I can't see anything within a reasonably close distance.
So that would just generally be that's also cost prohibitive as well?
Yeah, I would, you know, probably defer to one of the network folks, but I assume that distance, along with the challenges of the Forest Service land, would make a deployment very difficult.
Okay, thank you. Nothing further.
Okay, I'm going to get this in the right order. Commissioner Christman.
No other questions, thanks.
Okay. Are there any further questions for this witness? Seeing none, you may step down, Mr. Schreiner. And I believe there is at least one question, I believe, for Mr. Giles. Is that correct, Commissioner Christman?
Yes, I do.
Can we have Mr. Giles available again for that question?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead, Commissioner Christman.
You had mentioned that with this 37-mile distance of copper, that replacing all the electronics is just cost prohibitive. At what distance would it not be cost prohibitive?
It's not necessarily the distance it's the replacement of the pair gain system or the electronics. Yeah. That's really where the cost estimate became a concern, was the amount of money that it would require to replace the electronics, reusing the existing copper cables that exist today.
Well, kind of what I'm getting at is, so 37 miles, so that's a long ways. And so I imagine there's quite a bit of electronics along that way. And we're talking about them being at the far end of the 37, but if this becomes the solution for them, is there another customer that's 25 or 20 or 15, and in a short time they're going to have problems, and now it's too expensive to replace the electronics to keep that up? Or I'm really confused here on what amount of customers are relying on that cable system with outdated copper system that has outdated electronics, and at what point they're going to run into these same problems.
It's my understanding that the customers that fall within our fiber footprint, when we built the fiber cable, have been cut over to the fiber service, and that the Gerbigs and the other two residents that are the further out from our fiber network are essentially the customers that only reside on that copper. We really have no other customers on the copper cable, is my understanding.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, are there any other questions for Mr. Giles at this time? Okay.
I did have one add-on during the break. I was able to contact our engineering manager, and he did give me the age of the copper cable. That question came up when I was being cross-examined earlier, and I do have a date in which the copper was placed, if that question is still of interest.
Please.
1977.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Giles. Mr. Topp, do you have any other witnesses you would like to call before us at this time?
We do not.
And circling back, I know it hasn't been an extended period of time, but are you willing to stipulate to Exhibits 1 through 4?
Yes, we are.
Okay, then at this time, Exhibits 1 through 4 will be admitted into the record. Mr.
Johnson?
Clarification,
it's A, B, C, and D.
Okay, so A would be 1, B would be 2, et cetera.
Well, they have Exhibit 1, so I went with letters.
Oh, I see.
You
okay.
Differentiate.
Okay, Mr. Topp, is that acceptable?
Yes.
Okay. Then Exhibits A, B, C, and D are now admitted into the record. Okay, we've got that. We've got that taken care of. Do you have anything else for the record at this time, Mr. Topp?
We do not. We think that we have been responsive. Worked very hard in an attempt to make this circuit work. We've looked at all of the options that, you know, we could think of in order to improve this situation moving forward. We've come up with a creative solution and would ask that the commission endorse it.
Thank you, Mr. Topp. We will now move to Mr. Johnson. Mr. Johnson, you may call your first witness.
Thank you. I call Stacy Ibrill. I'm sure I mispronounced it, but.
And is the mic on? Can you state your name and spelling for the record, please?
Stacy Ibrill, Stacy Ebrill.
Okay, thank you. And Ms. Ibrill, were you here for my previous warning as to perjury?
Yes.
So you understand what perjury is and the penalties for it?
Yes.
Understanding so, do you promise that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
You may begin.
Good morning. Ms. Ebrill, what is your position with the commission?
I'm Consumer Affairs and Public Outreach Specialist.
Okay. And what do your job duties entail?
So related to this, I take all of the complaints that come into the commission and receive them, and we start by trying to solve them on an informal basis. So I work with the company involved to try and solve things informally, and if we aren't able to resolve, then push it to a formal case such as this. And I also do other duties with the commission, such as media relations and website content and communications work in general.
Sure. So you've been the point of contact for for the Gerbigs in their issues with CenturyLink?
Yes.
Do you remember or recall when the first complaint came in?
For this specific complaint?
I guess just overall with the Gerbigs. How long has this issue been going on?
I have complaints going back to 2016, shortly after I started here, And they go from 2016 up till current.
Okay. And is that illustrated in any of the exhibits A through D?
Yes. Exhibit D is our complaint history for the Gerbigs, and that's just taken out of our complaint system with a search by their name.
Okay. And I guess, do you know offhand how many different complaints we've had between the Gerbigs and CenturyLink?
So Exhibit D will show 14 complaints processed, and they're all of varying time lengths.
Okay. And each one of those is a separate incident or issue?
Yes, a separate complaint that was filed with us.
Okay. In your time with the commission, in your position, have you ever seen anybody with a complaint history this extensive?
We did have some customers, yes, currently or previously in that Belfield area that had extensive outage histories, which resulted in that proceeding in 2016, I believe, with the settlement agreement that was referred to. And that's what prompted that proceeding at that time.
Overall, though, is this a pretty extraordinary case?
This one definitely sticks out, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What other, I guess, as far as your interactions with the Gerbigs go, just tell me how this kind of started and what's gone on.
Sure. So the current complaint, as has been stated, was reported to me on August 27th, and the complaint was filed with CenturyLink that same day. There's been numerous conversations back and forth between CenturyLink. Lots of report or trouble tickets, I believe is the term they use, filed and canceled and filed again and canceled. There have been techs out there numerous times working on things, as CenturyLink has talked about, but it seems like either it doesn't fix the problem or, as has been said before, would solve the problem for only a very short period of time, and then the service would be out again. And as I said, since August 27th, my understanding is that their service has been completely off or only on for very brief periods of time. And when it's on, it's not reliable. It has static or... I tried talking with Ms. Gerbig one day, actually, and the call would only last about 5 seconds and would drop the call, and you couldn't talk any longer than that. And so then she had to drive to a hill with her cell phone to talk to me.
Okay. And just real briefly, item or Exhibit B, what would you describe that as?
Exhibit B is just a copy of the emails between myself and Patty Ann Miller, who is the case manager with CenturyLink who received the complaint. And so it's just the emails back and forth between me and her. And it'll just demonstrate once again that the repairs that were being made wouldn't last very long. There was confusion a lot of times about the trouble tickets being canceled. At one point, I was told that the service was fixed, and it wasn't. After talking with Mrs. Gerbig, she wasn't even aware that any work had been done at that point, so we had to reopen the complaint, and that is just a copy of our emails back and forth.
Okay. And then I think the only one left that we have is Exhibit C. Can you explain to me what that is?
Exhibit C is just the specific emails between myself and Mrs. Gerbig. And when she would contact me with her concerns and to just let me know what was going on, and also a copy of a letter that she had sent to the commission outlining her concerns with not having service.
Okay. Is there anything else in your interaction with the Gerbigs or with CenturyLink that you feel like is worth mentioning today?
No, I think... a lot of it's been brought up, but I think some of the unique concerns here are that cell phone service, as been mentioned before, does not work at their residence. So if an emergency does occur, they have to get in a vehicle and drive up to a hill in order to be even be able to get any kind of cell service. So definitely access to 911 services is a big concern. Also, they use their phone for business purposes. It was mentioned to me many times that, especially with COVID taking place right now, they're having to do CAF sales virtually by online sales where you have to call in and do your bidding. And, well, when the phone's not working, that was impossible. So Mrs. Gerbig has expressed to me over and over again that this is not just an inconvenience. It's a matter of safety and also is affecting their ability to run their business from their ranch.
Okay. No further questions.
Mr. Topp, any questions for this witness?
Thank you. Just briefly, Ms. Erbel, there, I don't have the exhibit with the list of complaints. How many of those complaints were in 2016?
Three.
Okay. And that was about the year of the settlement agreement was reached in the first case near the end of 2016?
Yes, I believe so.
And how many complaints were there in 2017?
Nine.
Okay. And then 2018?
Yep, there's a gap then. There are none for 2018 or 19.
Okay. So it would be fair to characterize the complaints, you know, that there were a series of complaints up until CenturyLink implemented the work that it did, and that, you know, became a problem again sort of after that gap. Is that fair?
Yes, that is fair.
No further questions from me.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
I'm sorry, may I ask one more?
Yes.
Thank you. Ms. Erbel, my understanding there have been a number of refunds provided to the Gerbigs, and is that your understanding as well? I'm not claiming that largesse on the part of the company, but they have gotten refunds for the times that they've been out of service. Is that correct?
Yes, it's my understanding that there are usually refunds. Sorry, I'm getting feedback. There are refunds given for the months. I couldn't tell you if it was every month, but I routinely get messages that they were issued a refund.
Any other questions, Mr. Topp?
No further questions from me.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Christman.
In your role in consumer affairs, you deal with complaints from a number of regulated utilities, this one, as well as like electric and gas utilities and such, correct?
Yes.
Hopefully not real frequent, but is it fair to say that there's times when just the initial like consumer affairs people for the companies, it just doesn't work out and you have to go up the chain of command within the company to reach resolutions for customers?
It's very rare. I've only ever pushed anything to a formal proceeding twice, and the CenturyLink case in 2016 was the one before this one.
But between that and just calling the 800 number or something like that, do you sometimes need to go to the legislative affairs people or something like that to draw attention to an issue that's not finding resolution?
Sometimes it seems like the people assigned to handle the complaints with me from the other companies that we regulate are the right people. So I'm already starting with the right people, I guess I could say. So usually it gets solved with the normal people that I work with.
Yes, I read through the dialogue between you and Ms. Miller. Is it smooth or difficult for you to go above that level within CenturyLink, get a hold of someone quickly, and work on resolutions?
It's difficult. Unlike the electric companies and gas companies that we work with them more frequently, and they're in this room pretty frequently, so you do know who to reach out to. And I can honestly say that I do not have a lot of contacts with upper management within CenturyLink. As you are aware, they used to have a liaison in North Dakota, and that position is no longer there. So as far as I know, there isn't a contact within the state that I know to go to when I'm not getting a resolution.
And did you find when that in-state contact was available that it helped?
It helped at least to be able to reach out to somebody one-on-one and, yeah, have a conversation and at least know that you got to talk to somebody. And what happened after that, you know, was out of our hands. But at least you did have somebody that you could pick up a phone and call and be able to discuss what's going on with that person.
Okay. And I just want to thank you for not just keeping a file and shrugging it off, but for moving it forward and getting us to this point of reaching a resolution. Not that we've reached a resolution,
right.
of working towards reaching a resolution. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Christman. Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Excellent. All right. Just a quick follow-up on Randy's question, and that is, Stacy, how would you characterize the engagement and responsiveness of CenturyLink on these issues of customer service since they eliminated the liaison position in North Dakota, or the North Dakota manager, I forget what Ken's mm-hmm. title was, but how has it been working with them since that time?
I think, as was previously expressed, the difficulty comes when the issue isn't getting solved. When I file an informal complaint with CenturyLink, it goes into their customer service advocacy group, and they have people from different offices that it gets assigned out to. And then my understanding is that they then, you know, pass that complaint down to the, you know, techs in the area that would be working on it. I don't get a lot of detail back through the system. They might tell me a tech was out there and worked on it, it's fixed, or a tech was out there and we think it's fixed, but I don't get a whole lot of details. And so when things aren't working, if I go back to that customer service person that I'm working with, they usually don't have a lot of details to tell me about what actually is happening on the ground because they're not there. And it'll kind of be a back and forth between the different parties, but it is really hard to get detailed information. And at some point, it feels like there's just only so far that person within CenturyLink can actually push the issue as well. And then, like I said, after that, I don't have a whole lot of contacts to go to after that.
And is it the same customer service person you're dealing with all the time?
No, there's a handful of them. I send complaints to an email set up for complaints, and then it gets assigned out, and there's probably like five or six different people that it'll get assigned out to.
And in the last settlement we reached with them, wasn't there a different regime set up for handling customer complaints in this area?
I haven't looked at that for a while. I believe it was only for the specific customers that were named in that complaint. I believe they were given a direct contact at CenturyLink to call rather than having to go through the 1-800 customer service line. But I would have to look at that settlement agreement again to remember that. And it would have only been for the okay. ones involved directly in that complaint, if I remember correctly.
All right. Yeah, that rings a bell with me too. What would you like to see moving forward to improve how you interact with CenturyLink, not just for customers in this area, but any place? What would be a reasonable ask of the company for you in terms of a contact and a process for following up on customer complaints?
I think that more detailed reports from that initial customer service person assigned would be helpful so that I actually know, you know, okay, they were out there. What actually did they do? Because sometimes the customer will ask me to, and I won't have any kind of details. Or sometimes I'll want to go discuss it with somebody here in the office, you know, who works with the telecom stuff more. And I don't really have enough details to be even able to discuss what they're doing and whether that seems like a reasonable thing to be doing. And then after I hit roadblocks, having a direct point of contact to go to kind of push things up the chain a little further, and, you know, having a certain person that I have that relationship with would be very helpful.
So you're willing to deal with a changing array of initial customer service reps, but if you can't get resolution there, you'd like to have a person to call that you can lean on to say this isn't working and we need to take this to the next step, or somebody needs to intervene and make this happen. Is that what I hear you saying?
Yes, that's correct. Because sometimes the process does work. We get complaints about other things other than outages too. So if it's a simple billing complaint and I send it in and it gets fixed right away, then great. There doesn't need to be any further action. But yeah, with these complaints that linger on and we're not finding a resolution, sometimes it needs to go to a different level than those customer service advocacy people seem to have the power to handle.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Appreciate all your work on this and other customer issues for the commission. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I don't have any questions, but thank you. Thank you for the work that you've done on this as well. Mr. Johnson, any redirect?
No.
Mr. Topp?
Thank you. I do have one question or information to pass along. You know, Mr. Schreiner is here as a witness. I know he was out to the commission in January and met with a number of staff and has been, you know, he should be considered the contact to the extent that there is a need to escalate issues. I also have regulatory responsibilities in the state, so I can serve as an alternate contact. To the extent there are problems with our consumer affairs group, you know, they're effective in resolving most issues, but to the extent there are any issues that are not getting done, we are both available to assist with those issues. So I wanted to pass that along to you, Ms. Erbel.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Topp. Commissioner Crisman, any further questions?
Yes, I'm thinking back to my discussion with Mr. Giles about the copper line and the associated electronics, and he kind of brought me comfort at first till I keep thinking about it more when he said that, well, in that much of that 37 miles, those people are being served off the fiber, so it's not an issue, and it's just these out at the end. Now I'm wondering, do we sometimes get complaints from outside of the Belfield area, but other CenturyLink areas regarding problems associated with copper or the associated electronics on the copper lines?
I don't know that I know specifically which lines are copper or not, and that I get into that detail, but we get outage complaints from other areas. Now, whether those are actual copper or not, I guess I couldn't say for sure. Some of the areas have been resolved in different ways. There have been some fiber buildouts in some other areas of the state that I know of from the CAF funding. I know some areas that some other cooperatives have taken over, but I couldn't tell you whether they're specific to copper or not. I don't know that level of detail. But we do get other outage complaints.
Okay. Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, I don't know what the correct thing here is procedurally, but if the proposal for these satellite phones for a 2-year period, if that's considered a settlement, then a settlement offer. As part of this, I guess I'm wondering if there could be some kind of a late filed exhibit or something, because I'm also relating back to Commissioner Fedorchik's point about what it's taken to get us to this point. And so now we're at this point, and I hope that if this turns out to be a good and acceptable solution, that we're not just putting out one tiny little part of a fire, but then what about other people who are on copper systems that were put in the 70s and also potentially have outdated electronics serving the copper systems? And by the time we get into the new year, this will be popping its head up somewhere else. So I don't know if that would mean kind of a late filed exhibit for what the plans are for serving other areas with similar technological issues potentially coming up soon, or just how to do that. But I guess the concern comes to my mind.
Mr. Johnson, do you have any thoughts on that?
I guess that might kind of get a little bit outside of the scope of the order to show cause here. I'm not sure how that would fit in. I'm not saying it can't. It just seems to me off the top of my head that that's maybe going a little further, a little different direction than we're dealing with in this matter. I guess I'm not 100% sure that we couldn't do that either.
If the company chose to offer some information, it could be accepted?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
No other questions.
Okay. Thank you. And I've made a note of that. I don't know that we have an answer, specific answer to it, but perhaps we could circle back before we close the hearing and just define if that is or isn't a path. I think it's very important, without question, but as Mr. Johnson states, whether or not it's within the scope of the hearing. So I think we'll have a moment to take a break after closing remarks before we actually close the record today to flesh that out a little more, if that sounds fair.
Yes.
Okay, are there any other questions for the witness at this time? Sensing none, you may step down. Ms. Eberl. And did I get that right? Brian, you were confusing me a little bit.
Too much going on in my head today.
Okay. Mr. Johnson, you may now call your next witness.
Sure. I would call Ms. Sharon Gerbig.
Okay. Will you please state your name and spelling of your name for the record, please?
My name is Sharon Gerbig, S-H-A-R-O-N-G-E-R-B as in boy, I-G.
And Mrs. Gerbig, were you here for my previous warning as to perjury?
Yes.
So you understand what perjury is and the penalties for it?
Yes.
Understanding so, do you promise that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. You may begin.
Thank you. Ms. Gerbig, can you tell me where, kind of just generally what area you live in?
We live in southern Billings County along the East River Road. We are just about equally halfway between Amadon and Medora. We're right north of the county line between Billings and Slope County.
Okay. And how long have you lived there?
We've been married 40 years, so I've been there 40 years.
Okay. How long have you been a CenturyLink customer?
Since we were married. Well, even when I was single, I was a CenturyLink customer when they were called Northwestern Bell, as far back as that.
So the progression of all the companies is always, the name's changed, but it's always been the same.
Correct.
Same company. Okay. When did you first start having really consistent issues with your phone service?
I started doing the complaints in 2016. Prior to that time, our neighbor, Margie, would kind of be the neighborhood person to do the calling. So we all didn't call, which probably we should have all called. I'm learning. I will continue to call.
So generally when you have problems, your neighbors have issues as well?
Yes.
Okay. How has your interaction with CenturyLink been throughout these problems?
I will call the 800 number and ask for repair. Most of the time, the people that I talk to are very pleasant and willing to work with me. I have had some instances where they have been very rude and not cooperative, where then in that case, I asked to talk to a supervisor. And sometimes it took three or four times of me saying, please let me talk to a supervisor. And then they'd say something and I'd say, please let me talk to a supervisor. And then I would eventually get a supervisor or a second higher one. And then that was more productive.
Okay. When you do have phone issues or an outage complaint, how quickly is it being resolved for you?
It depends. Sometimes it's within a couple days. This time it has been since the middle of August.
And I guess if you had to give me an estimate or an average, how many days of the week do you have good working phone service?
That depends if it's in a working situation. This time, in this instance, we have not had good phone service since August. Prior to that, sometimes the phone would be out 3-4 days before we would get, you know, get it back working. I would have called CenturyLink as soon as I got to the hill or if I got to town and used my cell phone, because that's the only place my cell phone works is if I'm away from home. I would call the CenturyLink repair place and get a repair ticket started. I would also call our local technician because I have his phone number and I say, watch for it. It's coming. We're without service. And he's very responsive for what I need. I did not always call Stacy or email her. Most of the time I emailed her because I was told after 3 days is when you can start the complaint process to get a credit on your account. And sometimes it was fixed within those 3 days. And sometimes I just said, I'm not going to mess with it right now. I'll just get the credit and not bother her.
Sure. When you've asked or been told you would get credit, has that happened and has that been a smooth process?
Most of the time, yes, it's been smooth.
What are the issues that you have with the service? When you say your phone is out, is it completely out? Is it static? Is it a combination? What's most of the problem if there is a consistent one?
Most of the time, the phone is totally out, and we get absolutely no dial tone. There are times when we have been told it's been fixed, and when we go to use the phone, it will either drop the calls after a few seconds, or it's so scratchy and there's a hum and all that kind of thing, you can't hear the other person anyway.
Okay. And that's affect your ability to contact family members?
It has affected our ability to contact family members, places we do business with, places we need medical issues with. My husband needs some pills ordered from the pharmacy. I can't do that because they mail the pills out. If we had a fire issue, we had fires in our area, just at the neighbors this past summer, there was a couple of them. They couldn't call us for help. We couldn't call them. We couldn't call the fire department. And our fire department, our ambulance, all that is on a volunteer basis. And so there's some issues of time of the people who are volunteering to do that service to even get to the place to get the equipment to get out to us.
Sure. Is there anything else that I haven't asked you about or that you've heard today that you would like to explain to the commission?
Yes, I do have several things.
Okay.
Okay. Like I said, we do get credit on our phone bill when we call for it, but it has to be, I was told, 24 hours or 3 days. I was told recently, 2 weeks ago, when I talked to a gentleman in the billing finances department, that it was only 24 hours. So there's been some miscommunication as to what the timing is of that. Like I said before, and everybody else has said, we do not get cell phone service at home. We have to drive to a hill, and it's not always the same hill, and sometimes it is several miles. I have had to drive up to 10, 12 miles to get to the right hill to get service at that particular time. If something happened that we needed emergency help, that would really be a detriment to getting the service that we need. The 911 issue is the most important in my mind today. Just because we can't get ambulance, fire department, law enforcement if we need it, that kind of thing. It also affects our work. I work away from home, and if I need to call my office to inform someone of something, I can't do that. They can't call me if there's an issue that needs to be taken care of. It just doesn't work. In the wintertime, when I come home and I leave work and I come home, it's an hour drive for me to get home. So I will call Gordon and I say, I'm on my way. Watch for me. If I'm not there in the amount of time that it usually takes me, then come look for me. If I have a flat tire, I need that kind of help, and I don't have that. So it's really a lot of stress, too, in all of these issues. Our livelihood depends on having access to the telephone. We do business. We're using the telephone. Like was mentioned, we sell our calves on the video, so that means we sit with the phone and talk to the rep in the sales ring and say, okay, yes, we'll take that price, or no, we won't take that price, or whatever it is. We can't do that. You can't watch the video if you're sitting on the hill talking on a cell phone. It just doesn't work. We sell replacement heifers. And we have had people who are trying to buy our heifers this fall that have been trying since September to contact us. And they haven't been able to get a hold of us on the landline. So some of them we've lost business from, which is not real good for our bottom line or our livelihood or our ability to, you know, make a go of this. That some of the people that are on the CenturyLink line also have other businesses. We have a neighbor who does professional welding, and he does a beautiful job and has business all over, but they have to call him at his landline to get him to know that they need this work done, because he does not have a cell phone. It doesn't work at his place either. He doesn't want to buy that kind of a service if it doesn't work. So he's lost money. We have had family members of the other people in our area who have said, you know, they see us in town and would say, well, have you seen so-and-so? We haven't been able to get a hold of him or her. Are they okay? We had a neighbor who was on CenturyLink whose wife had a terminal illness. They're not on the Belfield leg, but they are on like the Freiburg or wherever it comes out of. She had a terminal illness. He tried to take care of her as long as he could at home. But if she had an issue, he had to get in his vehicle and drive to a hill where he could call for help too. So it is really a stressful situation for a lot of people that has caused a lot of concern for us. We order equipment repairs, feed supplies for our livestock. When Gordon was president of the Grazing Association, we're 25 miles from Medora where their office was. He did a lot of business over the phone with the members of that association. If they couldn't get a hold of him, you know, they couldn't handle those kinds of issues. And some of them are kind of important and they needed to be dealt with pretty quickly. Like I said, we just don't have cell phone, and that really is a concern. And I don't know if satellite is going to solve the problem or not. I have some concern about it. We have some family issues with COVID. My mother, who is in the nursing home, has had been diagnosed as positive for COVID. I live 350 miles away from where she is at. If I have to leave quickly, I can't even get the phone call to go get the car warmed up to take off because they can't get a hold of me. I am real concerned about that kind of a thing. We have families who are on this leg of the CenturyLink line who have young kids. They are in school. Some of them are under the age of school-age kids. if they had issues with school, medical, or any of those kinds of issues, they can't get a hold of who they need to. We've lived in this area a long time. We need to have reliable service. We can't not have it. It is a lot of emotional stress and frustration. I get angry. I get frustrated. I don't kick the dog or the cat or anything, but it is really frustrating to try to pick up the phone and there's no service.
Prior to today and hearing about the satellite phone, has CenturyLink provided any other options or resolutions for this problem?
No.
And today is the first you've heard
of
this?
Today is the first.
Okay. I guess I don't have any further questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Topp, any questions for this witness?
No, we do not have questions.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Chrisman.
I'm thinking it was Mr. Giles, but I'm not sure. Someone previously this morning mentioned three customers out in this area that the satellite phone solution would be offered to. As close as I can understand, I think the Slope County line is where this would be the end of this service area. But from there north and kind of around your place, are there, on your side of the river, I suppose, are there other customers?
There would be other people.
There
would be
another Gerbig and one other, you couldn't remember
yeah,
the last name.
That would have been Mr. Henders.
He's the
guy that's the welder, yes. There is another ranch right south of us that has two families living on that would probably come back to CenturyLink if they had good service. Right now, they choose not to, I believe, just because they don't get certain new service. I've not talked to them about why they don't have the service. But we will see them on the top of the hill when they need to make a call. And they both have young children, those families. As well as all the business issues and family issues and that kind of thing. Yeah.
Where does the other Gerbig live?
In our same yard. Same yard.
So that's two. And then the welder, I didn't catch the last
name. That was Dorm Henders.
Okay. Where does he live?
He lives about, 5 miles east of us. I have been in contact with his family members. They called my daughter-in-law, who works at the courthouse in Medora, got my cell phone number to call me and find out how Dorm was doing. And so I was telling them, about the phone situation. And so I said, give me some information. And I have copies of their letters here that they are very concerned about him because of his health issues as well as other issues.
And so is your road to follow that river road up to Medora? Is that like when you drive?
That's what I drive to work.
How you come here?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And how far is that?
We're about 25 miles south of Medora.
I don't think I have any other questions, but I sure want to thank you for both your diligence, but also mixed in with that, kind patience. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you, Commissioner Chrisman. Commissioner Fedorchak?
Thank you. I appreciate the chance to visit with you, and thank you for taking the time to push us through. In my calculation of the cost of everybody's efforts on this issue, I didn't even include or failed to include all the time that you have spent on this, which is far exceeds everybody else's. So, goodness gracious, I hope we can come up with a solution here soon and put this to bed for you guys and everyone in your area. Tell me a little bit more about your concerns with the satellite phone. I understand you probably don't really know how it works yet, but just so that we and the company can hear what your issues are, or what you think they might be with that option?
I am concerned about reliability, dependability. I am also concerned about the battery life. If it's 8 hours talk time, and we let it set, am I guaranteed? I heard 160 hours of wait time, if that's correct. Is that the life of the battery? What happens when the battery is done? How is that replaced? If we use up our 3,330 minutes in a short amount of time, we do a lot of business by the phone just because of our distance. We don't have to drive someplace. We can get more accomplished that way. How often can that be replenished? Because of where we live, and we choose to live there, I understand that. I just want it to be dependable and reliable, and not have to have the frustration, the stress, and the worry about thinking, well, now today's the day it goes out.
Yeah, I can understand that. And so those are good questions for the company to answer in the discussion of this potential solution. I believe, my understanding is the satellite phone is, you charge it just like a cell phone. I guess that's what I would expect it to be. So you're like me and my cell phone, I plug it in every night and charge it overnight, and then it's ready for the next day. But I think you do need those answers in terms of what happens if the battery starts losing its capability to keep a charge for 8 hours, who pays for the new battery, et cetera, et cetera. My idea is that since it's the company's obligation to provide you with local phone service, they need to take care of the cost to get you a phone that works 24/7, and so the costs to keep maintain that are on the company, I would expect, and your responsibility would be to pay what it costs you to have reliable local phone service, and not the cost of satellite phones. I think is what I'm understanding the company to see it as well. So, okay, I think that you've outlined a really good explanation of what has happened to you, how this has impacted you and your family and your business and the healthcare emergency issues, et cetera. I appreciate that you recognize that it is your choice to live out there and you're not asking for more than what the law provides, which is reliable local phone service, and that's the solution we're looking to provide here. And I think the company's going to have to go a little above and beyond in order to get that for you in the near term, as soon as possible, and take care of the others who are out in your area who they're obligated to serve as well. So, thank you for all the effort you put into this, and I hope that this issue gets resolved as quickly as possible now that we've gotten it this far. So if there's anything else you want to add or feel you need to have addressed in terms of ability to contact responsive folks in the company to resolve issues if this doesn't work, I mean, we should address all those issues now as well. But it sounds to me like you've had somewhat of a good luck with your local service provider and your local technician. If there is other issues you want to add, please feel free now, but otherwise I don't have any additional questions.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Fedorchak. I just have a couple of questions. I believe you said 25 miles from Medora.
We're 25 miles from Medora, about 20 from Amadon, about 35, 36 from Belfield.
And I have to ask this because I know I think approximately west of you on the other side, but is that as the crow flies, or is that?
That'd be road.
Road times. As the crow flies, do you have an approximation?
Or would you be how fast and what direction the crow goes. I couldn't even tell you. I don't know.
Would you be east of Bullion Butte?
Oh, yeah. We're right across the river.
From Bullion Butte. Mm-hmm. Okay. That gives me,
yep.
That gives me a good idea.
Yep.
And I can appreciate having to go out to the top of the hill to make calls out there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any type of a number in terms of, could you quantify the financial loss that has been incurred because of calf sales, replacement heifers? Would you have any idea?
Probably thousands of dollars, but I couldn't give you an exact number because I didn't keep track of that. You know, you just say, lost that one, and we just move on.
And that would date back to 2016?
Oh, yeah.
Or
or earlier.
But and then 2018, 2019, no complaints filed, if I understand.
No complaints filed with Stacy.
With Stacy, but still ongoing issues during that point, that period of time.
They may not have been as long as this particular instance, but there were sometimes, yes.
Okay. I, too, obviously, I think we all have a number of questions on the satellite phones that we'll have to explore. The one that hasn't come up yet, well, in a sense it has, but have you been given any indication in terms of it's incredibly hot and you leave the phone on the dash, or if it's incredibly cold, which it is out there in, you know, periods of time where you look and I've walked out and things are fine, you're fully charged, and then, you know, if you don't have it somewhere warm, it's, you know, batteries running out.
We've not been told anything about satellite phones.
Okay, so that's a work in progress in terms
of
that discussion.
Yes, we first heard about it sitting in this room.
Yeah. Okay. All right, then I won't ask any other questions related to that. And I don't believe I have any other questions at this time. Mr. Johnson, any redirect?
No redirect and no further witnesses.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Topp, any redirect for this witness?
No further redirect.
Commissioner Christman?
No, sir.
Commissioner Fedorchuk?
No further questions. Thank you.
Okay, and I don't have any as well. Sensing no further questions for this witness, you may step down.
Thank you.
Mrs. Gerbig, thank you. Before we move to closing remarks, I don't believe there are any. Well, before we move to closing remarks, I'd like to take just several minutes. I don't know if Jack is available. It might be. It's a little unique in that I need an opinion from one of our attorneys. You're representing the commission, so I think I may defer to Jack if I could have just a few minutes. So, Matt, could you pause the recording for just several minutes?
Sure.
Go back on the record. Okay, is there anything else that should be considered for the record at this time? Mr. Johnson?
Not for me.
Mr. Topp?
Not from me.
Okay. Then we will move to closing remarks at this time. Mr. Johnson?
Well, it seems like through all the testimony from the company and staff and the complainant, there's obviously an issue with reliability and the quality of service to the point where it's a major issue. It seems like there may be a potential resolution on the table that came very late and unknown to many people, which I know there's some concern with the delay in that and why it just popped up all of a sudden on hearing day. But I think the adequacy of service issue has been addressed and met, and I guess now it's just a matter of how we address that. So that's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Topp, closing remarks.
Yeah, thank you, commissioners. You know, we recognize the frustration that the Gerbigs and other customers have faced out here. We made very significant investment in this entire region and an effort to try and fix these using the existing technology. It worked for a period of time, but clearly has become unstable. We do regret that the satellite phone option that we put on the table is just coming up here. but we have, you know, it's been a real short time period, about a month since this notice came out, and the hearing has gotten ready. And we've frankly been exploring every option on how we get this fixed on a going forward basis in a reasonable fashion. This is the best option that we've come up with, and we'd ask that the commission consider it. We, you know, certainly would be happy to present this to the customers on this line and give them an opportunity to have their questions asked and an opportunity to use it to see if, in fact, this is addressing the concerns that have been raised in this hearing. We do think a satellite phone deals with the safety and security issues that are just so critical in this proceeding. We also, you know, despite the old plant, we think that we have, you know, our technicians have made every effort to try and keep the existing plant moving forward. Speaking with Ms. Gerbig directly, and she was complimentary about their responsiveness. With respect to our consumer advisory group, we do have them appear, you know, we do have a group of them so that they can handle things as efficiently as possible. But Mr. Schreiner and I are both available to the extent that any of those issues do not work going forward. We would ask that the commission approve the satellite phone as a reasonable option, and hope that we can believe that that will address these issues on a going forward basis. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Taub.
Thank you, Mr.
Commissioner Crisman.
It's hard to know exactly how to react with such a last minute proposal laid out. So I certainly need some time to contemplate that. If I understood right, if the SIM cards are expected today and that the satellite phones would be operable at that point, I hope that either today or tomorrow or the next day or whenever the SIM cards come in, if the company delivers those and if customers accept them and give them a try, probably well before we're able to come up with a closure on this case, we'll know whether the complaints are still coming in or not, and how successful of a proposal it is. I hope that's the case. In any event, I think the fact, I appreciate the fact that the company, even though I would have liked to have known earlier, I appreciate the fact that a proposed resolution has been laid out and some thought has been given to that, other than sending another technician to outdated, obsolete plant, pretty well knowing that you're not going to get it resolved, just to say, well, we were out there and tried. So that is, I think I feel a lot of optimism about that there's something new here, albeit sort of a, assuming it works, it's a midterm solution. The company's talked about it as being 2 years. Hopefully well before that, we'll have some idea of the successful RDOF bidders' plans in the area, and hopefully we piece together a solution that will provide much better service than what we've had in these recent months, and can get the essential services out there that people in North Dakota and around the nation not only expect, but legitimately deserve.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Fedorchuk, if you are still able to comment, any closing remarks?
I do, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I also agree it's great to have a potential solution on the table. I see two pathways moving forward for how to tie this up, but both of them involve certain sort of written solution in front of us. And I don't know if the company filed that or just provided it in testimony, but I would, we could order a solution here that may include, that I would, Dean would include the potential satellite and the, whatever else we think the company needs to do to make it right in this case. And I feel like I have more than enough information to go on to start working on that type of an order and resolution, fairly soon. The second option would be to entertain settlement by the parties. And so I guess I don't really have a strong opinion which way it goes. I would assume the parties would like to have a say in what the solution is. So I would guess that they would want to have a settlement for us. But that said, I think that I would like our staff to get going on an order so we can wrap this up as soon as possible and tie this solution together and memorialize it in writing so everybody knows what the expectation and plan moving forward is. So thank you everyone for your time this morning, and I look forward to tying this up as efficiently as possible.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Fedorchak. I too look forward to and maybe looking forward, but would very much like to find a resolution and expedite that resolution just due to the nature of what's currently happening, which is limited service. And it's probably more pronounced this time of the year when the days are incredibly short, and it's you can't envision going to the top of the hill when it's sunny and it's kind of a pretty view. You're up there at 7 or 8 at night this time of year, and it's pitch black. And you're typically going up a trail. I shouldn't say typically, but I am. So that's how I relate to being able to make a call back home when I'm out there. And time is certainly of the essence. Thank you, everyone, for your participation today, and especially to the Gerbigs for making the trip to Bismarck. It's greatly appreciated. If there is nothing else regarding this matter, it is 12:26 p.m., Thursday, December 10th, 2020, and the hearing for case number PU-20-442 is now closed, and the record is closed as well. Thank you, everyone.